What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Even though he homered after being hit by the pitch, he swings and this one is cranked out to left. Lucas turns, he looks, and it's out of here. Is it Adrian Beltre or Marcus Semien? Marcus Semien with his second homer of the series, and the Rangers strike first with a two-run shot here in the second.
And the Rangers get one. Play-by-play voice and Rangers insider Jared Sandler with the call on DFW Sports Station. They win 10-4. They still lose the series. They're 5.5 back in the wild card, 7.5 back in the American League West. Joining us on the DNM Leasing Hotline is the Sandman here with Sean and Bobby. Choppy out on vacation this week. Rank the morning show in order of comedy, 1 through 4.
Like the four of you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, who's funniest?
Oh, man. That's tough. I'm going to go with... Peyton makes me laugh the most with some of the funny and dumb things he says.
Yeah.
And his just like total lack of awareness on certain just parts of life.
Right.
RJ makes me laugh, also makes me want to punch a hole in the wall. So he gets deducted for that.
Yeah.
But it is funny. And then I would go, oh man, it's a tie between you two for third. I don't know who... Who's I'm going to go ahead and give it to Bobby 3 and Sean 4. And I realize that that's a risky decision to put Sean at 4. But, Sean, I do think you're funny.
Thanks for your time, Jared.
I think Bobby's slightly ahead.
So you think, though, for the record, that RJ is funnier than Bobby?
Oh, 100%, yeah. Bobby is absolutely not funnier than RJ. No shot.
Yes! All right.
Bobby will have some funny
solo
things.
Interview.
Bobby, that's fine. Just like Dan Orlovsky.
All right, I'm going to ask you Scott Braun questions now, Jared.
Bobby will have some funny things, and I think the fan text would agree. And I know the fan text like hates me, and that's fine. I appreciate that they listen to the station.
Yeah,
but Bobby will say some funny things, but then he also will say some things that just will annoy the crap out of you when he like is so dug in on something.
Yeah.
So I'll go RJ over Bobby.
It's nothing to do with comedy. You're penalizing me for something completely outside the question.
Hey, it's his rankings. It's subjective to everybody. It is, comedy's like food. It's subjective.
I will say this, Bobby. If it was a stand-up competition, like if you guys both did stand-up, I don't think RJ would do well. I find you to be incredibly bright and incredibly thoughtful in like your delivery on things. Whereas RJ just like, I'm funny, I'm RJ. You would be better at stand up. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah. All right, I half forgive you.
That's impressive.
Thank you.
Sandler, how many times over the past month have you said to yourself, this Rangers season is over, they're not getting in?
Oh man.
Or did you feel it more than a month ago, which I'm sure wouldn't be the best thing for you to say as being a big TV host?
It is always tough. I preach, hey, it's a long season, and it is. Like, look at the 2023 season will hopefully always be,
yeah,
or at least the next few years, a reminder to people of how you can feel like that it's the Titanic that is totally sunk, but it's really not. But so it's always fool's gold in May and early June to just say the season's over, unless you're like the Rockies and you're already 20 games back. That's a little different. The Rangers weren't that. And the Rangers had things you could point to where it's like, hey, this pitching's great, and they defend well, and they should be better offensively. But I'd be lying to you if I told you that in early June, I was like, yeah, this thing is definitely going to turn around. I mean, it was just tough when you had two runs, then one run, then no runs, then two runs, then two runs. You know, it's like, gosh, you know, give us a sign.
Yeah.
And then once they got out of it, I felt pretty good about them. Being a playoff team, I think that obviously over this last homestand, you just I never love when you only have one path in. And right now, it looks like the Rangers' only path in is the wild card. It would take a tremendous run in probably winning five of your remaining six games with the Astros at minimum to overtake them. And that's not even accounting for whatever the Mariners might do. So I don't love that we're sitting here August, whatever the date is, and your only realistic path in at this time is the wild card. But I still think they have a run in them. But this is a huge series, guys. They got four games against the Royals. They're trailing the Royals. And then we go home, three games against the Guardians. The Rangers are trailing the Guardians. So I would say that it would be pretty important for them to win maybe five of seven games this week. And then, you know, we can probably have a much better idea. But, Sean, I've definitely, after some of these games, gone home and thought, man, maybe this is just not the year. Maybe it's just not going to happen.
Jared, they had a, like, 4 to 6 week stretch where they were one of the best offenses in baseball. And it's mm-hmm. it's cooled again. What about that run wasn't sustainable? Why is it regressed again?
Well, I'll say this, Bobby, and I said this on the post game last night, and I'll say this in terms of what they need to do, and this will kind of answer the question. This was a lineup built to slug. This was a lineup that was built to hit the ball out of the ballpark. This was not a lineup that was built to get on base at a super high level. Like the Blue Jays, Rangers just play the Blue Jays. They lead Major League Baseball on base percentage. When Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins built that roster, I don't know that they thought we're going to lead Major League Baseball on base percentage, but they looked at that roster and they probably thought this is a team that is going to be really good at getting on base. I think that when Chris Young and Ross Fenstermaker looked at the Rangers roster in spring training, and we all did the same thing, by the way, we said this is a team that is going to be among the best in baseball at slugging. And so during that 2 month stretch, they got better at a lot of things, but they were still like top half kind of in slug, but not top five in slug, right? They didn't fully show that form. Well, yesterday they had four home runs, and I mean, it's obviously an obvious comment, but what I said to Dave and Mike was, this is the version of the Rangers that we need to see if they're going to make the type of run they need to make and get into the playoffs. We need to see the slugging Rangers because, you know, they got, I think, three guys. Well, Adolis is on the IL, so take him out of it. I think it's three without him. They have three guys who oftentimes are in their lineup with a sub-300 on base percentage. You know, that's tough sometimes, but you can get away with that if you start hitting the ball over the fence more. And so I think that was the – like, if you were to look at that two-month stretch, I think that would be the one thing. It's like, man, they're still not slugging the way we think they can, right? The Rangers right now are maybe on pace to have one guy hit 25 home runs. Phew. That's not to say only one guy will, but I think we need to look back at the end of the year and see that three guys have gotten to 25 home runs because three guys have gone on that type of a run over the final 6 weeks of the season. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Jared Sandler here on 105.3 The Fan. Give me a grade today for how it's worked out on their trade acquisitions.
Well, so I'll say this. With relievers, the two relievers, you know, Danny Coulomb had one bad outing, right? And so because he hasn't had a large sample size,
His ERA went to a 7.
Yeah, I mean, he had one bad outing, you know, against Toronto, in which he, for the first time ever in his entire career, he faced three batters and allowed three hits without getting a single out. That had never happened in his entire career. Danny Coulomb, to me, has been an A. He helped you win two games, playing a huge role in late-inning relief situations. Phil Maton obviously hasn't worked out as well yet. He got off to a great start. He won you at one of the Yankees, I think it was the Yankees extra innings game maybe, where he pitched a scoreless top of the 10th, and that's huge. Like that is pretty significant. But so far he hasn't, you know, the last couple outings, he hasn't been as good. I'll give him a B- right now. And then Merrill Kelly, he's had three starts. I want to give him a pass for the Philadelphia thing. You know, he didn't use it as an excuse before, but privately, I think he talked about it was tough getting his family and kids situated and moved. You know, they got school and whatnot around that time. And, you know, he just wasn't sharp against Philadelphia, but he was really good against Arizona. And Merrill Kelly, the pitcher, was really good against Seattle. Merrill Kelly, the fielder, made a bonehead mistake that, you know, he acknowledged. He's like, I don't know what happened when he threw to third with two outs. That kind of changed the complexion of his outing. So I think Merrill Kelly has been an A-. So overall, give it a B-plus for the three guys. But I'll say this. At the end of the year, we need to look at we need Danny Coulomb and Phil Maton to be studs who get leverage outs consistently when we've got a little bit of a larger sample size to judge on.
How much should Ranger fans excuse CY in the front office for not going and getting that bat?
Well, the one thing I would say is what bats were traded, and the reality is not many were. All right, Ryan O'Hearn was traded. The Rangers, I know it would have been great. He went to Wakeland High School in Frisco, but he's a lefty, and the Rangers really, they needed more of a right-handed bat. Then they needed a left-handed bat. They needed, if they were going to get someone like Ryan O'Hearn, they needed to be the right-handed version because, you know, of their struggles against lefties. Ramon Laureano is a guy who I thought would fit, but San Diego got him a part of a bigger deal. And there's no shame in losing out on a deal to San Diego because AJ Preller just has no limits. He's like the kid in high school where it's like your mom said you have to be home by midnight. Dude, I don't care. It's 12:30. And then like an hour later, you're like, dude, you had to be home by midnight. He's like, I really don't care about any of that. I'm not going to, So other than that, there
Suarez.
Really weren't bats. Yeah, and Suarez, I don't know, Suarez was great. I don't know that the Rangers, unless they're willing to trade Sebastian Walcott for a rental, are you gonna get Eugenio Suarez, right? And some people say, well, he plays third. That's not a fit. They can make it fit, right? They can make it work. But he's a rental, and you would have had to have given up Sebastian Walcott. And I think, there's a guy in Washington named Alex Call who, I think would have been an interesting fit. But the sense I get is that, the ask was really high. And unless Rangers fans are sitting here saying I would give up Sebastian Walcott for a role player with control or a rental, a straight rental, I don't know that the Rangers really – I don't think the Rangers really had deals out there that made sense. And I say this, they're not – like Ross Fenstermaker and Chris Young look at the same things we look at. They know that this team could have used a bat. You don't think that they were trying to do it, to bring a bat in? And then if you add that with the fact there really weren't a lot of bats moved at the deadline, relatively speaking,
I think people just get, and that's why we have you on to give us the reality. I think people just get pissed off with the thought that, you can make a move. Yeah, the Rangers will make a move, but it's got to fit financially. And, we're not going to spend like the ultimate big market teams. I think that's in the background.
I get that. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought the money thing. The Rangers clearly wanted this was, whether you like it or not, it was important to ownership that it stayed under the luxury tax threshold this season. The understanding being that they will, very willingly go over it again next year and probably the year after. And so that also made it a little more challenging. And then again, I think if you look at the Rangers farm system, it doesn't always work this way where if you trade for a bat, then teams want bats in return. Pitcher, if you trade for a pitcher, they want arms in return. But if you look at the Rangers farm system, Sebastian Walcott, right, one of the top prospects in all of baseball, but then there's a pretty big gap between Walcott and their next best position player prospects. And so I think that maybe created some challenges as well in conversations they had with other teams that they looked right at Walcott and said, yeah, if Walcott's not in the deal, then sorry, we're out.
Jared Sandler joining us here on 105 The Fan. Jared, what's happened to Robert Garcia this month? He had been really good for them throughout the year, and it's just it feels dicey every single time he's out there now.
Yeah, no, it's been a really rough run. I think, to not to oversimplify it, but if you look at the command of where he's throwing his pitches, his fastball and his slider, if you just looked at a little chart of where, the pitches that have been hit, where they've been located, most of them have been in, places in the middle of the zone, not working the edges. And he's got really good stuff. But, it's not like he's throwing 103, right? The harder you throw, the more margin for error. He's not throwing 103. he's still got really good stuff. He's got the type of stuff that could play as a closer. And, you know, he does throw strikes, which is good, but you also got to throw quality strikes. And so, Bobby, I think, and I don't know how much mentally, right? Like that's something I can't quantify. Has it just snowballed and is he in his head? Does he need some kind of a reset? A part of the problem is, you know, someone asked me this the other day about, you know, why he was used in this spot or that spot. Because the Rangers, for the most part this year, their identity has been a low-scoring team that pitches really well. They're in a lot of games. You know, we talked on Saturday when the Rangers got blown out by Toronto. They haven't had a lot of those games. They've lost a lot of games that have been frustrating, but not because they've lost by 10. It's because they're losing close games that you feel like are winnable. And when you're constantly playing close games, there really isn't a great opportunity for a quote-unquote soft landing to ease a guy back in. But I don't know about the mental side. I can't tell you, I can't speak to that, but I know from a more objective side, it just doesn't seem like he is commanding his pitches. And you would have, you know, this is the kind of thing someone would say right now. He's more of a thrower than he is a pitcher.
Thank you, brother. We'll see you on TV tonight. Appreciate you.
You got it, fellas.
Jared Sandler, Rangers insider and play-by-play on the D&M leasing hotline. It is a new Music Monday. Is it going to be all Tay-Tay? Next on Sean and RJ, 105.3 The Fam.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
I'm Casey Kasem. Coming up next are the three biggest hits of the year.
We've been on a better run of songs lately, I feel like. Lately, we've gotten some better contributions, and this will be a better one just because there will be no Taylor Swift in it, Sean, unlike your anticipation. So I'm not going to put Taylor Swift
in it.
Is it
because there are none out?
Yeah, I mean, that's mainly why.
October 3rd is when the album...
Yeah, it's not out.
Okay, so it didn't get leaked or whatever?
No, it did get leaked. All so right. That's mainly why. But I'm going to position it as if I'm just taking a really strong stance and that I'm not going to play her. But we do have three songs this week that I think were pretty good, as Laura picked them again this week. She was... I got to consult with the youth, I guess, is the thing. And just say, what do we need to hear? The first song this week, Khalid is out with a new song for what feels like the first time in like 6 years, I feel like. This is In Plain Sight.
Got so much to tell you, cause something ain't right. Should've saw it coming. In plain sight, the lies that you sell me, the seed in your eyes.
I love Khalid. I think Khalid
DJ
makes,
Khalid?
Oh my gosh, no, that's DJ Khaled. It's a different one. This is Khalid. He's the one who was he had East Side. Remember that song years ago? Halsey. On the east side, in the city where the sun don't set. That's
oh, yeah.
He was on that song. So I love Khalid. I think he's great.
I'm in on this. Catchy.
Peyton,
I like the beat.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs love up.
It. Yep, thumbs up.
All right. Next one, we got some country music, as typical. This is Jordan Davis, one of Kristen's top country crushes right now. This is Jordan Davis, Ain't Enough Road.
Maybe by Memphis, I miss you less than I'm missing you now. Might roll right through Oklahoma, leave you in a red dust cloud.
Look,
and
cookie cutter is a thing for a reason. It's because people like it, and this is nice. I like it. Do I listen to this and go like, man, this sounds like this is gonna be burned in my memory for right. No, it sounds like a dozen other songs I've heard before, but it's good. It sounds good, and that's the thing. This is the most unique song of the week. And,
wait, Peyton. Are you in? Are we going to make it 2-for-2?
Yeah, Jordan Davis of the Eagles. Some great vocals there from him. So,
Jordan Davis from the Eagles actually can sing. It's become a thing.
It's not just Mulata?
No, it's not. All right, so the third song of the week, it's the most unique artist that we've got. It's the most unique song. It's the one probably I like the best. This is Dijon. It's Yamaha.
This is my least favorite so far of the three.
First off, I love Dijon's vocals. I think he's a fantastic singer, but it's it's different. It's like it's unique. It's something I haven't like typically heard before, like the way that it's cut up, the way that it's produced, everything else. But I really, really like that. I like Dijon in general, but that one I know is not going to be everybody's cup of tea. But I like all three this week. I think all three are good.
Yeah, all three. I'll go 2.5 out of 3 here. That last one was a little off there, but the first two were great.
A new music Monday. After a rough start, Bobby getting or his daughter.
Yeah, she's saving all this.
A little bit of a roll. Speaking of Tay-Tay, did you see the podcast numbers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my word. The podcast appearance on New Heights with her boyfriend and brother, 379 million views on Instagram, 61.5 million views on X, 34.5 million views on TikTok, 15 million views on YouTube, 1.3 million live viewers. The episode stream crashed, passed 3 million followers on Instagram, 400,000 new YouTube subscribers since, most concurrent podcast listeners ever, according to the stats.
Wow. To be expected, I think. Look, I'm not going to say she doesn't bring numbers. She doesn't bring eyeballs. She clearly does.
You like that?
Did your daughters watch it or whoever, which one, everyone liked her?
Addison, it was that quick. She was Taylor Swift obsessed. Now she's like, yeah, she's fine. That's where she's
gotten
to.
Because of you.
No, it's got nothing to do with me.
You gotta ruin your girl's idol.
It felt like she almost liked her more initially because I was like, blah. She liked I got something that I like that you do. Like, she almost like,
I was so happy with it. I was so happy you were out sick while we were reviewing this because she was so likable. She was cool. She seemed chill.
Yeah. She was funny. She had some funny moments. You know, she talked about, you know, obviously the Eras Tour and then like her, you know, learning football from Travis. Great.
Travis was the cringy one during it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, is he really this in love or is he acting?
How much did you watch of it? Did you watch the whole thing?
How long was it?
It was over 2 hours.
Two hours with her on it?
Yes, the whole thing. I got to about 1:40. Then I was like, I told Mackenzie, I said, all right, you watch the rest. I'm out.
I skipped basically all the music stuff.
What? So
her getting back her music and the Eras Tour, I skipped all that.
Did you come away from it feeling like, okay, this is a real relationship? Because I know we've questioned.
Yeah, he's going to propose within a year's time.
So you think that
he has to?
You think it's genuine? Like, though, they are like, this is nothing for public consumption. I think they are really about each other.
No, I don't question any of that for public consumption. But Travis Kelce is so corny.
Yeah,
he's so cheesy. I'm like,
he's a simp, man.
I'm like, is this real? Is he just still in honeymoon phase? Is he acting like his real self? Or he's just like, I would listen to the air. I would listen to you re-record an album, and it's the same songs I'd listen. And he says it like genuinely. It's, you know how I am. I'm not mushy like that. Like, sure. I can't take it. And I'm like, there's no way that can be that genuine and mushy.
Here's my theory on Travis Kelce. If you look up Travis Kelce's track record,
yeah.
Kelce was a character concern coming out of college. People were concerned with him. They thought he was...
I don't watch his dating reality show.
He was thought to be a little bit too... Like, that was a question of, like, can we trust this guy? So I think what you see now is either, A, you may just see somebody who's gone so far the other direction, or B, he knows what his reputation has been, so he's worked really hard to present a certain thing publicly. Because we saw Super Bowl, he's in Andy Reid's face, basically, like, ready to punch his head coach in the face. I can't imagine
he's
that
on the podium
corny.
With you guys fight. But like, you can't even come with your own original lines after you win.
I can't. I mean, it's just like the girl he's dating. Like, she's they create vanilla cookie cutter things. That's what they do. But I look at it and I go, I think that's got to be persona. Like, I do feel like some of that is just he's aware of what his reputation had been throughout his career, worked really hard to change it, and he's not going to do anything to look flippant or anything else. And I'm sure Taylor Swift sees somebody completely different, just like he probably sees a different version of Taylor Swift than we see. Like, he probably sees somebody who gets pissed off about stuff and, you know, complain about somebody, like the normal relationship stuff. But yeah, she was, what I saw, she came off more likable, which is what I figured she would and why I tried to avoid it, because I want to hold to my takes.
Is this something or nothing? Dylan Gabriel, well, talk about your Shador clip first that you did not love.
Oh, yeah. And it's hard to hear it, so I didn't pull it. But it was Shador Sanders was walking onto the field the other day, and some kid is apparently asking for an autograph. And he said, I got a game to play. It's not really good look for me to be signing autographs before a game. And it's like, Kate, you maybe have gotten this is why like it's tough to trust your decision making on some things. That's not the optic you have to worry about.
Yeah,
where you're like, I can roll in with the boombox playing my own rap hits, like that's fine. But like if I go out here and sign an autograph for a kid, that's going to be a really poor look for me.
So Dylan Gabriel played as a result of Shador being injured, and I'm going to take you back to Dan Lanning, the viral amazing clip. When Oregon was taking on Colorado, and this was Dan Lanning, whose quarterback was Dylan Gabriel, addressing his team before taking on Deion and Shador.
Rooted in substance, not flash, rooted in substance. Today, we talk with our pads. You talk with your helmet, right? Every moment. The Cinderella story is over, man. Right? They're fighting for clicks, we're fighting for wins. There's a difference, right? There's a difference. Right? This game ain't gonna be played in Hollywood. It's gonna be played on the grass. Yes, sir, yes. Right? It's gonna be played on the grass. And let's go.
Keep that in mind. As Dylan Gabriel, mid-game, was being interviewed.
It's just part of it. You know, there's entertainers and there's competitors. And I totally understand that. And my job is to compete. And that's what I'm focused on doing. Of course, we're doing this mid-game. But, you know, it's something that I'll get used to. And just want to be the best team that I can and create an environment where we can all go do our best work. That's all we want to do.
Give me the beginning of that line, the first 3 seconds, Pepe. That is what has taken over as the story.
It's just part of it. You know, there's entertainers and there's competitors.
That's it. There's entertainers and there's competitors. Is that the shot at Shador? Now, for proper context, Dylan Gabriel came out and he was like, no, that is not what I was saying. I was not insulting my teammate. And the way I took his possible justification, Bobby, is that he was talking about like TV people. He was talking about people on television who discuss their sport and team and quarterback depth chart.
Yes. But that quote is going to be really... I'm conflicted on this one because everything
you know, there's entertainers and there's competitors.
Everything you hear about Dylan Gabriel is he's not one to do something like that, to take a shot like that. But everything you hear about Dylan Gabriel is how aware he is and how much of a like field general leader, like understands the optics, does everything like that. So it's hard for me not to think he would have had a blind spot to think this might sound bad. Like this might sound like a reference to that. Because that thing, that clip we played from Lanning, that they're fighting for clicks, we're fighting for wins, that I know at the time sent reverberations in college football of, oh, snap, like they just put it on trial for Colorado and what they're doing. That was something that was considered massively, with knowing the cameras were in there to film the pregame speech, that sent just shockwaves of like, that's Lanning taking a straight shot at you don't belong here. And so it's, man, that's tough for me to look at and say that he didn't have.
In his postgame presser, he said, I've explained it. Entertainers are you all, media. Competitor, that's what I am.
Now, to be fair, the we're fighting for clicks, they're fighting for roosies. I think that was still while Gabriel was at, he was still at Oklahoma then for that one. But still, it's still the Lanning philosophy and the things that he drives into them.
Oh.
And
he wasn't on that team?
I can't remember if that was 24 or 23. That's what I'm trying to remember.
2 years ago.
If it was 23, then he was at Oklahoma then. But okay. I can't remember if that was 24 or 23. I think it was 23 because I think that was after they had won their first three games.
Yeah, because they were in the same conference back then. Last year, Oregon was in the Big Ten.
Yeah, so this is, that would have been 2 years ago. But it's still the same thing that Lanning and like implements in him. And Gabriel is that thought process of toughness and leader and everything. That's why I'm going to go with it is just a misstep. And he didn't understand how it was going to be perceived. But it's, I could go back and forth on that.
I'm gonna go with it was not a shot at Shador. I'll lean towards that. That was a 42-6 beatdown.
Oh yeah.
With what they did. 42-6. What do y'all think? 877-881-1053. 877-881-1053. Yeah, because was Bo Nix the quarterback?
In 23, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was Bo Nix. For that game in which they destroyed Colorado.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to remember. I couldn't remember if that game was last year or the year before. But yeah, 23 would have been Bo Nix.
I have not read in detail what you just were trying to talk to me about during the segment. Do we have a Micah Parsons tease?
The Micah Parsons negotiation might be worse than you thought. That's next in B-Low, D-Belt.
105.3 The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Now on second down, here's a pass that's dropped and intercepted. Kemon Hall picked that ball out of the hands of the running back Ali at the Raven 40, and the Cowboys have their second takeaway of the night. Hall touchdown immediately.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not. Over to you, Bobby.
Is it all performative, or is this for real this time? Oh, one NFL insider says, no, this is real this time. Let's talk about it here in Below the Belt, which is brought to you by Window Nation, as well as DNM Auto Leasing. You can check them out at dmautoleasing.com. Sean, where have you, in general, the ebbs and flows of how you view the Micah Parsons negotiation, or lack thereof, as to just it being typical Cowboys? Because I think that's been the line from a lot of people. It's like, oh, it's typical Cowboys. Has it reached a point where you're like, nah, this feels different?
I think it's gotten more personal, the most personal of all the negotiations. I don't blame Micah Parsons if he doesn't want to be here. If my boss talked to me, talked about me like that, and I had options, and I know I could go get max money anywhere else, I would say get me out of here too. I'm not working for you. It's too insulting.
Well, Adam Schefter was on Get Up
but
this morning.
Mm-hmm. I do believe that the Cowboys and what they're doing with the negotiation is typical. And I think Schefter's about to talk about one of their tactics.
Yeah, and this one here, I don't know. The Schefter, obviously, when you listen to any insider, they have their sources. So one may be giving you more than another does, and so maybe one side is making you feel a certain perspective, whatever else. But generally, Schefter's going to be pretty plugged in across the board. So Adam Schefter was on Get Up this morning, and Dan Orlovsky was talking about Micah Parsons being available for the first game. And he's like, it's the typical Cowboys. This is what they do, and they're going to get it done. And that's when the conversation transitioned a little bit.
I would agree with you normally, because everything they do feels so performative. This one feels different.
No, totally. This one is different.
Right? They made him mad.
It's gotten personal, and they're no closer to a deal, and there's no reason to think that the Dallas Cowboys and Micah Parsons will be able to work out a deal before the start of the regular season. Now, again, it's August 18th, and sides always can come together. But we want to emphasize, there have been zero contract negotiations since late March and early April. Is that going to change all of a sudden? I don't think so.
I think that the Cowboys' negotiating tactic is giving you the silent treatment. We're not talking to you until literally the very last minute and moment. That's my punishment for you. You have a contract. You betrayed me. You stabbed me in the back with your statement saying that I trapped you in this room and made it sound like I put a DeAndre Jordan chair underneath. And this is your punishment. I also think right now that Micah hasn't done a good enough job of scaring them into believing that he could be a monumental disruption during the year. Now, maybe Micah doesn't want to do that, and to his credit, he doesn't want to screw over the rest of his teammates, and he is technically under contract. But showing up at practice and putting on IG, your Dallas Cowboy helmet paraphernalia, and being at all the games, and being there every day, that would not lead me to believe, if I was in the front office, that he's not going to skip games and that he's not going to be TO inside of our locker room. So I think from that standpoint, again, this guy's agent of the year, Forbes number one. I think David Mulugeta and Micah Parsons have erred. They've screwed up in that category. They haven't fired any shots to make any of us make me feel that he's going to be disruptive and a problem.
Here's the thing. Fair or not, legitimate or not, and I'm not saying either way, but fair or not, legitimate or not, I think the Cowboys have done an effective job, even if this was or wasn't their intent, they've done an effective job making the rest of the league ask, what's wrong? What's the problem here? Is there something wrong with him? Is he, does he have an attitude problem? Is he focused on football?
Yeah.
And I think it's
leadership.
It's introduced.
All they kept talking about the opening presser was leadership.
I think it's just introduced enough of a question to teams around the league, whether they were going to pick up the phone and call on it or not, or whether the Cowboys intend to trade him or not. I think it's made enough people from the outside just observing it, look at it and go, what's wrong with him? Why aren't they doing this? Why are they doing this with him? And it's made them pause to where it does put in a position of, if you start making the...
But they did it with Lamb too.
Right, but if you start making the insinuation of I'm gonna cause a ruckus, like if you're Micah, well now you're playing into potentially new suitors who are already kind of going like, is there something wrong? And now you're causing trouble in your way out of that. Now it seems like they're going, okay, do I want to do that?
Yeah.
Do I want to mess with that? Because I think that that is...
Give me a bad... Give me the top two or three bad boys in the NFL.
Currently or just over like recent history?
What? Either.
Recent history. Antonio Brown immediately comes to mind.
Okay. But Antonio Brown, right? Like... He found the Patriots afterwards. Now, it limits the market, but he still ended up on the Patriots and the Raiders.
Yeah.
Even though he was a problem in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Dallas, now after T.O. left Dallas.
Like, Dennis Rodman kept getting teams.
Sure.
And I think we know now in today's sports world, like Harden, hey, I'm going to blow this up. This isn't who I am. This is what I have to do to get out.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean?
I think that's normally because football, it's a lot harder. Pickens is working really hard right now not to project a certain image. And you got to remember, same agent, probably similar advice. Look at how they're playing Pickens right now. Just I'm on my best behavior. What has been said about me is not true.
Yeah.
You're not going to hear any of this. I think they feel like Micah has matured a great deal. And I think that's accurate. I think Micah has matured over the last few years. And I think that when you look at what the reputation sort of was, or some of the chatter, some of the buzz that existed earlier in his career, he's not going to want to lean into that. There would have been a point, and I know they're two totally different cases, but there was a point where it probably wouldn't have been a good idea for Ezekiel Elliott to be loud and problematic during his contract holdout. If he would have done that, there's already other stuff that people are going to go, okay, well, this kind of seems like the guy that we've heard about then. And I think that that's the thing, is that there's enough people just asking, why aren't you just getting this done? Why aren't you just paying him? And if that's the case, if this is your typical negotiating tactics, why are you so publicly and loudly talking about things off the field with him? You've asked way more questions about Micah Parsons off the field publicly than you asked about Ezekiel Elliott. And there was way more to go off of with Ezekiel Elliott than there was with Micah Parsons. But you're very publicly going, I don't know. Is he a leader?
It also, and Adam Schefter's great at what he does, it also benefits the Cowboys to have Adam Schefter say, there's zero movement. They're not even picking up the phone.
No calls, yeah.
It benefits, like, I would guess, I don't know at all. I would guess, did Adam Schefter get that from Micah's side or the Cowboys' side? Would it make more sense to get it from the Cowboys' side to scare Micah and put it out there again? The Cowboys aren't budging. They're not budging. You're playing this year under the tag.
Yeah, or under his option. Yeah, and then they have the tag that they can apply to him next year. I said this last week. I think if he plays on the option year this year, the chances shoot up astronomically that he's traded next year. That they tag him and they say, all right, we'll work out some deal for his rights. But if they can get something done to where he's got the extension, I still think there's a window here to extend an olive branch and to smooth things over a little bit. I think on Micah's side, they probably feel like we've done our part. We've done our due diligence. We've talked to you twice. We've communicated. We're ready to go. And you guys are, there's just this odd gamesmanship of, well, I'm not going to deal with the agent. I'm not going to do that.
Now give me the percentage that a deal gets done before the opener in your mind. You over or under 50%?
It's such a like just a wild guess at this point, because they're not even talking. You have no idea how far apart they may be. I'm going to say mostly gut. I'm going to say 40% they get one done, because they're so far. I just don't know how how likely is it that they're going to just pick up the phone? Because I think as soon as they pick up the phone and call, it would get smoothed over. I just don't know that they're going to blink on that.
When does he have to actually step on the practice field to play against the Eagles?
So, obviously, everybody can be different. Ezekiel Elliott, I'm trying to remember. I think it was...
Dak was practicing.
Yeah, Ezekiel Elliott was not. And Zeke went on the field and played, I think, without practice that week. I'm trying to remember if he didn't practice at all or he practiced maybe a day. Like, went through a walkthrough or something like that. Obviously, running back is going to be a different position, too, than whatever they're going to have Micah do. I would imagine, initially, if he's just going to show up and he's going to play and wait for his trade, if that's really what they want, then I would imagine that he would be used sparingly in week one. He would be used in obvious pass rush situations is what I would guess. Because if he's not going to show up and practice and get ready, or if they feel like he's behind in any sort of way in terms of the meetings or the scheme or whatever else that they're trying to implement now, he's probably only going to be used in these situations where it's like, okay, go out there. You're rushing the passer.
Can you imagine? I can't imagine, actually. The week of, the deal gets done. He's ready to go for Philly, but it has to be in this limited role. And you ended up paying him 41 or more only to have him be a half participant or less against the defending champs in your division.
Yeah.
I'll lose my effing mind. I'll lose my freaking mind. I really will. I've like looked at that bell right there to smash that computer screen, but it hasn't happened yet. That's what that's a very distinct possibility.
Yeah.
No, and instead of just giving the 45, now maybe they're still at 50. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We still don't know what they're asking for.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea?
No, because I mean they haven't talked, so it's like it's not even like they could put in a request for how much they're talking for because they won't talk. So that's the thing. Like it's all exists in each other's minds. Jerry's got his idea, I'm sure, of what they want to do.
What do you really lose if you're David Mulligetta and you call Steven Jones or Adam Pacifica, the cap guy, and go, "Hey, you guys want to do anything? Where do we stand? What do you lose?"
So I'm not sure from his perspective what it would be. If I were to put myself in his shoes, I would think, I'm not going to beg you to take Micah Parsons. I've called you twice. I've done my due diligence. This is not on me to do this whole thing. Yeah. There's a certain level of respect. There's a certain level of expectation. We've told you we're ready to go. You didn't respond to calls previously. He's a superstar. He's a future Hall of Famer. I'm not going to beg you to take my phone call to negotiate with him. You're either going to pay him or you're not. And I've told you we're open and I've told you we're ready and you're not doing anything about it. At this point, the ball's in your court and the onus is on you to actually do something about it. And I think that's sort of where they're at right now, perspective-wise.
So that is Adam Schefter saying, nope, still absolutely nothing, and it is definitely personal. That's taken over Below the Belt. We will recap the Ravens game with Nick Eatman, 9:20, here on your home of the Cowboys and your home of the Rangers. Why is Bobby already free agent shopping for your favorite baseball team? That's not doing anything for the rest of this season. Is Bobby officially out on the Rangers? That's next with some Diamond Cavs on 105.3 The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.